my friend. I can't find her.
From the time I went to sleep to the time I went awake, there's nothing. It's just a void.
My baby girl's life was taken by unscrupulous individuals who may have done this before but will probably do it again.
Tragedy and mystery surround the death of a young woman remembered for her laugh.
Because obviously they knew something and they hadn't reported anything.
We're going into a death trap.
Lauren Agee found dead Sunday in Center Hill Lake.
The only time you're going to report it is when law enforcement is en route to the body.
There is something about being at someone's last place of life and knowing they were alive one second and dead the next.
And he said, I need to tell you that your daughter didn't make it. She's dead.
Tune in on July 26th at 4:30 p.m. to Without Warning Podcast, hosted by Sheila Wysocki.
My friend, I can't find her.
From the time I went to sleep to the time I went awake, there's nothing. It's just a void.
My baby girl's life was taken by unscrupulous individuals who may have done this before but will probably do it again.
Tragedy and mystery surround the death of a young woman remembered for her laugh.
Because obviously they knew something and they hadn't reported anything.
We're going into a death trap.
Lauren Agee found dead Sunday in Center Hill Lake.
The only time you're going to report it is when law enforcement is en route to the body.
There is something about being at someone's last place of life and knowing they were alive one second and dead the next.
And he said, I need to tell you that your daughter didn't make it. She's dead.
Tune in on July 26th at 4:30 p.m. to Without Warning Podcast, hosted by Sheila Wysocki.
Southern Fraud True Crime covers cases that may not be suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. Your daughter has traveled a couple of hours away to hang out at the lake for the weekend. Not just a camping trip, but Wakefest, a huge popular lake festival with lots of security and people. You are uneasy about her going, but she's also 21 years old and no fool. She's a good girl, makes good choices. She has an incredibly bright future. She's driven, beautiful, and accomplished. Do you worry? Of course you do. All parents do. She's still your baby girl, but she's grown. She's got to live her life. You text her on Sunday, no response. You call, no answer. The calls turn frantic and branch out to friends, no response. What has happened? Finally you get the call. The call every parent dreads. Your daughter has been in an accident. Come quickly. You rush to the hospital, expecting injury, fearing the worst. It is the worst. Much worse than you could ever imagine. She's gone. But what the police tell you just doesn't make sense. You know your girl. This isn't right. You have just entered a personal nightmare from which there is no waking. Welcome to episode 25, The Suspicious Death of Lauren Agee at Center Hill Lake. Center Hill Lake is located in DeKalb County near Smithville in Middle Tennessee. It's a gorgeous lake with high cliffs, hidden coves, and firm restrictions on cutting down trees and ruining the natural beauty of the surrounding hills. Country star Alan Jackson famously broke the restriction after building a lakeside manor worth more than $5 million. He cut down trees that obstructed his view. Jackson had to agree to a series of free concerts on the lake to make the deal. But he got a sweet private peninsula with a multi-story mansion perched on a bluff above the water's edge in exchange, complete with its own boat dock and helipad. Jackson sold the estate to a retired Fort Campbell general in 2012 for $1.5 million, taking quite the bath on the deal. But word has it, it's up for sale again. The lakeside estate is now just a fun thing for locals to point out to visitors when touring the lake by boat. And mansions running in the millions are common on the beautiful rolling hills surrounding Center Hill Lake. But celebrities, especially country music stars, have long come to Center Hill for privacy and retreat. Brooks and Dunn had a houseboat docked there, and Miranda Lambert was seen walking down a dock, trying to cover her face with a hat, right after her divorce with Blake Shelton went public. Word spread quickly, houseboat to houseboat, not to approach her. The locals know how to be discreet. Since Tennessee only has two seasons, summer and winter, there's a fairly long recreation season at Center Hill Lake. There's camping and plenty of cabins to rent, canoeing, pontoon and houseboat rentals, fishing and hunting, and on busy weekends and holidays, the wake of speedboats will rock the nearby docked houseboats. Center Hill is home to 9 commercial marinas, including Pate's Ford, home of the annual wakeboarding tournament known as Wakefest. This year, it will be held this coming weekend on July 21st and 22nd. It's a massive party, a lot of drinking, and hordes of people not normally on the lake. 2 major sponsors of the event are Bud Light and Fireball Whiskey, if that tells you anything. Houseboats will form a line and tie together, and then in front of them, small boats do the same. They tie up out there to watch the tournament and party. But my point is, once a year, the lake is descended upon by more than just the normal holiday visitors. With prizes in the thousands for tourney winners, folks come from all over to participate, or to just hang out, watch, and of course, party. This is what Lauren Agee was invited to in July of 2015 by her so-called friend, Hannah Palmer. Lauren Taylor Agee was born in Biloxi, Mississippi, on August 19, 1993, to Sherry Smith and Brian Agee. I'm going to quote the family's description of her because it's lovely. Lauren lit up every room she entered with her sweet spirit, infectious energy, enchanting smile, and disarming dimples. If you've seen any photos of Lauren, you'll know what they mean. She wasn't just pretty. She was gorgeous. A striking, olive-skinned brunette with a 1,000-watt smile. And she was an extremely vivacious and outgoing girl. Her parents divorced when she was young, and Sherry was remarried to a man named Michael Smith, who owns his own marketing and ad firm in Hendersonville, Tennessee. Sherry herself is a very successful realtor there, and Lauren lived happily with her folks while attending college. Lauren also stayed close to her biological father, Brian, and his daughter, her half-sister, Allison. But she was also very close to her stepdad, Michael, and his kids, Josh and Jordan. She was exceptionally close to all of her step-siblings. She was a good girl from a good, tight-knit family with such a bright future ahead. She was very athletic, enjoyed singing and dancing, even appearing in a music video. She was a member of the Hendersonville High School Golden Girls, which earned her a dance scholarship to Bethel University. But she changed her mind and left to study criminal justice at Vol State University in Gallatin, Tennessee. In July of 2015, Lauren was in her second year studying criminal justice and had a steady beau named Chase Rutledge, whom she adored and told family and friends was the one. On a sunny afternoon, Friday, July 24th, Lauren came downstairs and told her mom about Wakefest and an invitation she had received. Sherry later says she told Lauren to be careful and hoped she had a great time. She had a sense of foreboding, though, and squeezed her extra tight as she hugged Lauren goodbye. It didn't help that Hannah Palmer was the girl Lauren was going with. Not just a night out, but the whole weekend, 2 hours away from home, on a huge lake for a big booze-soaked party. Hannah was bad news, a troublemaker, and Sherry felt, at best, a party girl and a fair-weather friend. She only hung out with Lauren when she didn't have a boyfriend. Sherry had also noticed Hannah was a bit jealous of Lauren. Hannah worked as an assistant at Vanderbilt in the law department, and Lauren had just earned a coveted internship with Gallatin attorney Lindsay Ralston, and she told her mother that Hannah was upset about it. Sherry said that Hannah didn't have many friends, and Lauren felt sorry for her. But Hannah paid her back by talking about her behind her back. Lauren, however, always sympathetic, brushed over this. She was generous with her friendship and her time. And Lauren was a 21-year-old adult, so Sherry didn't push things. Lauren told Sherry that the two girls would be staying in a cabin near the lake, driving down on Friday and then back home on Sunday. There were other tangential friends there that weekend as well, like Lauren's ex-boyfriend Clint Martin and his girlfriend Callie, Evan and Teresa Shelton, Brix Gambrell, Cassie Franks, and Samantha Arnold, another supposed close friend who later behaved very strangely after Lauren's death. According to some sources, Lauren originally made plans to attend Wakefest with Samantha Arnold. But Samantha called her and said she was riding with other friends and there wasn't enough room in the car. Then Hannah Palmer called. Hannah was going to Wakefest to hang out with her new boyfriend, Aaron Lilly, and his friends. She probably wanted a buddy to go with, so she wouldn't be the only girl. Lauren decided to take her Jeep and drive down there with Hannah. The girls were excited for the weekend, documenting their trip down to the lake on social media. Unlike with Samantha, Lauren had now agreed to go with Hannah, her new boyfriend Aaron Lilly, and Aaron's friend Christopher Stout. Lauren had a boyfriend, so this wasn't supposed to be a setup, just friends partying at the lake with a cabin to stay in. It wasn't until Lauren got there that she found out there was no cabin. They were to camp on a steep cliff, 90 feet up from the water. You had to canoe over to even get there, and then climb straight up to the 90-foot incline, holding onto a rope wound through the trees to pull yourself, avoiding bushes, rocks, ledges, and all kinds of obstacles on the way up. The guys, Aaron, Chris, and another one, Brix Gambrell, were all good friends, and they got there early to set up the campsites, winding the climbing rope and then going wakeboarding themselves while waiting for the girls to get there. Brix Gambrell's role in all of this is a bit unclear, but he is named in Sherry Smith's wrongful death civil suit that also includes Hannah Palmer, Aaron Lilly, and Chris Stout. But he was not there when Lauren's body was found, and he was not questioned by police. And you may have noticed that I said campsites, plural. That's right, there were two. This is not how it was officially reported, not that the police actually investigated even the one campsite. But it's true, and we will circle back around to it. Hannah and Aaron had the only tent. Evidently, Lauren was expected to huddle up with Chris Stout in a sort of hammock called an Enu. It's way more narrow than a hammock and was stretched between two trees, dangling perilously over the water 90 feet below. For the sake of clarity with that unusual word, I'll keep referring to it as a hammock. The campsites were separated by a 3-foot gap with a ledge. You had to climb down the ledge, then back up another ledge to get over to the other campsite. Aaron and Hannah were in the main campsite with the only tent. This is why the private investigator named Sheila Wysocki, who was hired by the family, considers the arrangement as two campsites. They were separated by the 3-foot gap. Lauren and Chris were in the other, more narrow campsite that could only hold two camp chairs and that hammock that was stretched between two trees, hanging over the water. There will be pictures on my social media to give you an idea, though we don't have many crime scene photos. For a bathroom, they had sectioned off a small place at the nose of the cliff where the girls would have to drop their pants, hang onto a tree, and then pee down the hill. Sounds lovely, right? There is a picture that was on social media and many news reports of Lauren in the hammock with Chris Stout behind her with his tongue stuck out, classic frat boy pose, as if to say, "Look what I'm about to hit." But we know that Lauren wasn't into this douche. She made that clear to friends. However, there are some who believe that Lauren knew she would be camping and not sleeping in a cabin, as she had assured her mother. But even if that were true, I don't think she would have expected these sleeping arrangements. Again, aside from the fact that the camp was terrifying, she had a boyfriend and absolutely no interest in Chris Stout. And besides, she only had a flimsy pair of rhinestone flip-flops, one change of clothes, a sleeping bag, and her phone. The shoes definitely weren't suitable for hiking up the 90-foot cliff. Ever the optimist, she decided to make the best of things. We don't really have a clear account of what happened Friday evening when she and Hannah got there. All we know is that Aaron Lilly and his friend Brix Gambrell had been there ahead of the girls, setting up the campsites, with Chris Stout arriving shortly after them. None of the official interviews talk about what went on that first night, Friday, on the clifftop campsite. Chris claimed to have hooked up with Lauren, or at least to have made out with her, but there's no proof of this. There is not definitive evidence of who slept there Friday night, but by Saturday evening, Lauren was looking for another place to sleep. What we do know about Friday night comes from a girl named Cassie Franks, who went to Hendersonville High School with Lauren. She ran into Lauren at the Marina Bar, before Lauren had even been to the campsite. According to Cassie, Lauren made it very clear she had no romantic interest in Chris Stout. Remember, she had a boyfriend named Chase. She was going to hang out with her friends and party, not hook up. Cassie said, quote, "I feel like she was just having to put up with him. She was Hannah's wingman." Remember, Aaron Lilly was Hannah Palmer's new boyfriend. Considering their actions later, it's easy to forget that Aaron and Hannah weren't really an established couple yet. Also, Cassie just so happened to be the ex-girlfriend of Aaron Lilly. After Lauren's death, she had quite a bit to say about Aaron's character, calling him abusive. She even admitted that they were both charged with domestic violence when they were dating, giving more weight to her candor. And she offered photographic evidence of her injuries to the DeKalb County Police after Lauren's death, though they declined to look. I'm sure her memories of their relationship colored her opinion of Aaron. But then she and Lauren were the ones hanging out, weren't they? And Lauren wasn't the one dating Aaron. Hannah was. In Cassie's official statement to police, she said Hannah Palmer approached her at Fish Lips Friday night, asking her questions about her relationship with Aaron. Fish Lips is the Marina Bar I was talking about. Cassie Franks wrote in her police report that Hannah asked her to come out to the parking area to look at texts on her phone. Lauren and Aaron both tried to stop this, but the girls went out anyway. Once they got to the parking lot, Cassie said, quote, "Hannah grabbed my hair and took me to my knees. I then hit Hannah in the face and she ran off. I then left the marina, leaving Samantha, Lauren, Hannah, and Aaron." The next morning, Cassie went back to Wakefest and hung out with Samantha Arnold and her friends all day, running into Lauren a few times. Saturday at Wakefest, Lauren was seen drinking and partying heavily, watching the tournament and having a good time. Cliff jumping is a regular pastime at Center Hill, and certainly for Wakefest goers. Aaron, Chris, and Bricks were all bona fide thrill seekers, wakeboarding, cliff jumping, motorcycles, lakes, oceans, etc. You get the point. If one peruses Aaron's social media, you can see all of this. And his buddy Bricks travels the world hashtagging yacht life everywhere he visits. Chris Stout's social media shows the same obsessions, though he has been quiet for some time because he's in jail on an unrelated charge. They claim that they all went cliff jumping, including the girls, along with some other friends. After Lauren turned up dead, Hannah, Aaron, and Chris claimed that Lauren might have hit her head on the rocks after she jumped, saying she passed out for a few seconds and might have had a concussion. If that's true, no one said a thing about it until after she was found. And Lauren definitely carried on partying as if nothing had happened. This scenario is difficult to believe, and I will get more into that when we go over Lauren's injuries. Even if she did hit her head cliff jumping that day, it's not the injury that wound up killing her. Her injuries were far too substantial for her to have shook it off and gone on partying that night. After a day on the lake, watching the tournament, cliff jumping and wakeboarding themselves, they canoed back over to the marina for the evening to hang out at the bar. Lauren can be seen laughing and then smiling and waving at a security camera. She seems like her completely normal, fun-loving self. But then, as caught on the same security footage, Aaron Lilly starts messing with his ex-girlfriend, Cassie Franks. It looks like he was trying to hug her, and she shoved him away. Twice. Watching the video footage is strange. You can't tell if it's a legitimate fight, if he's harassing her, or if they're just joking around. I paused and rewound it several times, and it seems to me that she pushed him away twice. He might have been laughing, but you can't see her face to see if the feeling was mutual, or if she was really angry. I'm going to go with angry. This pair had a history of abuse. I don't think she would have joined in on good-natured joking with Aaron Lilly. At this time, I'm going to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. Lauren stayed partying on into the night at the bar Fish Lips. Like I said, she is seen on video footage, looking like her normal vivacious self, smiling, laughing, mugging for the cameras, and having a blast. Cassie Frank saw her again and said that Lauren asked her if she could stay with her group. Cassie was staying on a houseboat with friends, but she apologized to Lauren, telling her there just wasn't any room. I'm sure she felt terrible, but it wasn't her houseboat, and she doubtfully had much choice. Other friends of Lauren, Evan and Teresa Shelton, were the last people at the marina to see her alive that Saturday night. Evan is adamant to the family that Lauren did not appear to be drunk, slurring, or incapacitated. This may have been a kindness on his part, as other witnesses did say they saw her drinking heavily, and her blood alcohol content from the autopsy was twice the legal limit. Regardless, Evan said that DeKalb County police never questioned him or his wife. Chris Yarchuk was working security for Wakefest. At the time, he was an off-duty White County police officer. He said that he briefly talked to Lauren and her friends and that Lauren was very outgoing while her friends were quiet and reserved. I have a feeling I know why they seem reserved. They were around a police officer, and according to witnesses, there was more than beer up on the clifftop campsites. The guys had moonshine, pills, and MDMA, otherwise known as Molly, which acts as a stimulant with psychedelic effects. If they were using Molly, they would have been paranoid and not interested in talking to a cop. Unlike friendly, outgoing Lauren, who had no trouble talking to Officer Yarchuk. And for what it's worth, no drugs were found in Lauren's system during the autopsy, only alcohol. Officer Yarchuk said he got a nervous feeling as he watched Lauren and her friends paddle off at 2:30 in the morning into the darkness towards their clifftop campsites. There is even a dark cell phone video where you can hear them laughing and saying they were heading to a death trap to go to sleep. On Sunday, Wakefest continues during the day, winding down in the afternoon. At around 4:45 p.m., two fishermen spot a body floating face down in a cove. Father and son, Lynn and Dylan Blair, tried to call 911 but had no cell service. They then went to the Pates Ford Marina office and alerted Deanna and Harry Elder, who worked at the marina. The Elders radioed TWRA, who asked the Blairs to go back and guard the area until officials could get there. Harry and Deanna called Chris Yarchuk, who had worked security. He went quickly to the cove to wait for TWRA and the DeKalb County Police. Right away, he sensed this was a crime scene and stayed to watch everything. At this point, besides Officer Yarchuk, only four people knew the body was in the cove, the two fishermen and the couple who worked at the marina and called for help. And yet before rescue teams were even on site, here come Aaron Lilly and Chris Stout paddling up in their canoe. Aaron called out something like, "That could be one of our friends over there," or, "That could be our friend who's missing." Mind you, they had definitely not reported Lauren missing at this time. They just happened to paddle over. The TWRA, or Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency, and the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department pulled the body out of the water. It was Lauren Agee. Chris Yarchuk saw two things that alarmed him. One was what he thought looked like a bite mark on Lauren's chest. He told the DeKalb County officers and EMS who transported her body that they needed to do a rape kit. The second thing he saw was a triangular mark on Lauren's stomach, set with lividity. Lividity is what happens when a body lies in one position after death, and blood pools to the lowest extremities. The markings on Lauren's chest would indicate her body rested against something hard to make the triangular pattern. Obviously, this would not happen in water. But then, a lot of things wouldn't happen in the water. As Officer Yarchuk put it, people that drown don't float, they sink. And a body in the water starts to sink as soon as the air in the lungs is replaced with water. Once submerged, the body stays underwater until the bacteria in the gut and chest cavity produce enough gases to float it to the surface like a balloon. The buildup of gases can take days or weeks, not hours. And you can look at Lauren's autopsy photos and see there is no bloating or swelling that would indicate she had been in the water long enough to rise to the surface. However, bodies that are dead before they reach the water could have different floating patterns. A corpse that falls face first might remain on the surface, since there would be no way for the air inside the lungs to escape. A face-up corpse would fill with water and sink in the normal fashion. Remember, Lauren was found face down. She didn't sink, and there was no water found in her lungs at the autopsy. The official cause of death is blunt force trauma to the head. The contributory cause was listed as a possible drowning, even though there was no water found in her lungs. I have to say, I've read ME reports before, and this one is unusual. There is editorializing at the end that fits neatly with the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department's version of events. That's not the job of the medical examiner. The ME even repeats a rumor that Lauren was thought to have gone off to see a friend on another houseboat. That rumor came from Hannah, who was later detained by Chris Yarchuk at the marina while Aaron and Chris were being questioned by Detective Jeremy Taylor. She initially stuck with Aaron and Chris's story that the last time she saw Lauren, she was in the hammock at 3 a.m. and they all went to sleep. But Deanna Elder said that Hannah told her earlier that Sunday that Lauren had already gone home. Hannah would later claim that Evan Shelton told her that Lauren might have gone to stay on a houseboat. Evan Shelton denies this conversation, but then he was never questioned as an official witness by DeKalb County either. Mind you, that is now three different stories Hannah Palmer has told. Ryan Melanson, also from White County, was a reserve officer and was the next official on the scene in the cove where Lauren's body was found. He and Chris Yarchuk transported Aaron Lilly and Chris Stout back to the marina to meet with the DeKalb County officers that had come to take over the investigation. Melanson questioned Chris and Aaron, who both stated that Lauren never returned to the campsite on Saturday night. He asked them if either of them had had sex with Lauren, pointing out that if they had, evidence would be found during the autopsy. At that point, Chris changed his story and claimed he had consensual sex with Lauren. This entire exchange was overheard by Harry Elder. Both Melanson and Yarchuk found Aaron and Chris's behavior extremely suspicious. Chris Yarchuk said, quote, "When we got them into the pontoon boat with us, Aaron told Chris to shut up. I will tell them the story. Don't say anything." Officer Ryan Melanson had an even more disturbing exchange with Aaron Lilly. He said, quote, "I saw him looking at my sidearm, so I asked, 'What are you thinking over there?' And Aaron said, 'I am thinking how I'm going to get that gun off your hip and get off this boat.'" Officer Melanson said curtly, "That is not going to happen." About 10 minutes later, Aaron said it again. He wanted off that boat. This definitely did not sit well with Ryan Melanson. Aaron, Chris, and Hannah were taken to the marina and briefly detained for questioning. All three gave very brief written statements and then were released by 7:15 p.m. No official death investigator was called to the scene. They simply pulled Lauren's body from the lake and sent her to the hospital. After Aaron, Chris, and Hannah were released, they were allowed to go back to get their things and clean up the campsite. No matter what opinions DeKalb County might have formed in those 2.5 hours, you can't tell me it was proper to release a potential crime scene back to the only witnesses. Later that evening, Harry and Deanna Elder saw smoke coming from the top of that cliff. The implication is clear. They were burning something, probably everything. What's more, Lauren's personal belongings were never returned to her family. Other than her flip-flops, phone, and a couple of other things you could see in police photos. Not the clothes she was seen wearing on the security camera footage from the marina. And even worse, Sherry Smith said the clothes Lauren was found in did not belong to her. I've seen the autopsy photos before the examination began. The clothes were put on clumsily, with clasps missing on the bra, and the bra itself is twisted. And considering how adamant Sherry Smith is that the clothing Lauren was found in was not hers, I think the implication was pretty clear. She was redressed by someone else. Chris Yarchuk was so convinced the three knew more than they were saying that he took it upon himself to record audio as he interviewed them shortly after Lauren's body was found. All three of them claimed that when they woke up Sunday morning, Lauren was just gone. Aaron Lilly told Yarchuk he thought Lauren was gone to meet an old boyfriend. He said, quote, "I honestly wasn't really worried about it because I didn't think anything had happened and I didn't think anything would happen." Chris Stout then gave Yarchuk his theory, saying, quote, "Honestly, I don't know. My honest opinion is she got up to the bathroom and slipped." How many more times can these two say honestly or honest? Chris would also later clarify that he never felt Lauren move or get up from the hammock. At this point, he wasn't even admitting he was in the hammock with her. And then it's Hannah's turn. She tells Officer Yarchuk, quote, "I know she probably went to pee, but she didn't have her shoes, she didn't have her keys, wallet, phone, and she would, like, not leave without that stuff." You can hear her crying. She sounds upset. "Okay then, Hannah, why didn't you report her missing? Why didn't you at least start checking with her other friends? What the hell is wrong with you? You claimed she was your best friend, and yet you did nothing." She also would clarify this statement, saying she thought Lauren must have gone off with other friends and would be back, considering that she had left all of her things, completely contradicting her original statement. And that when their group couldn't find Lauren at Wakefest, they went back to the campsites to look for her. Bullshit. Unfortunately, Officers Chris Yarchuk and Ryan Melanson were not with the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department and therefore not part of the investigation after they transported Aaron and Chris back to the marina. But one of them called Sherry Smith and told her they thought the death was suspicious and she should have Lauren's friends investigated. When she got nowhere pressuring DeKalb County to reopen the case, Sherry Smith filed a wrongful death suit against Aaron Lilly, Christopher Stout, Hannah Palmer, and Brix Gambrill. Aaron, Chris, and Hannah all pled the fifth. A judge wound up dropping Hannah from the lawsuit, but recent updates in the case have allowed Sherry Smith's attorney to appeal this ruling. Brix Gambrill lawyered up and is still in depositions at this recording. And according to private investigator Sheila Wysocki, someone was posting terrible things about Lauren and false information about her death online, and the IP address was traced back to the same street that Hannah and Aaron now live on. The couple had moved to Florida a month or so after Lauren's death and married less than a year later. But as far as DeKalb County is concerned, Chris, Aaron, and Hannah have never been considered suspects in her death. They ruled her death accidental as quickly as they could, pretty much the afternoon they discovered her, before the autopsy, before interviewing the witnesses, before talking to her family, pretty much just right away. Drunk girl falls from cliff and drowns. End of story. At this time, I'm going to pause for a final word from our sponsors. Getting back to the timeline of events that Sunday, Sherry and Michael Smith finally get the call they have now been expecting and dreading. It's past 8:30 that night. They are told there has been an accident and they should come to the hospital immediately. They were met there by Detective Jeremy Taylor, who had now officially taken over the investigation for DeKalb County. Sherry told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "He said, 'I just want to tell you that your daughter didn't make it. She's dead.' My gut told me, I said to him, my first statement, 'Where are the people she was with?' And he stepped back and he looked at me and he said, 'We have them. We're questioning them.'" Well, that was a bald-faced lie. They had already let them go after barely questioning them at all. They took brief written statements from each of them and then released them, allowing them to go back to the campsite to get their things, essentially destroying the crime scene. She was also told by officers that she did not want to see her daughter's body because Lauren's head was split open like a watermelon. That was a complete lie. Lauren's head, though very injured, was very much intact. Now, let's get to these official written statements. Hannah Palmer's written statement reads, quote, "Last night we were at Pates Ford Marina. We got in the canoe to go home, parentheses, the cliff. We got to the top and all went to lay down for bed. Me and Aaron were in the tent. Lauren and Chris were in the hammock. When we woke up this morning, Lauren was gone, but all her stuff was still on the campsite. We thought she might be at Wakefest, but she wasn't there. We immediately went to the campsite when coming back to the dock. She still wasn't up there, but her stuff was. Something is scribbled out here. I went to see if she might be at Pate's Ford Bar and saw that, something is scribbled out again, policemen were headed to our campsite area. That's it. Then her name is signed in huge letters scrawled at the bottom. Note how many times she scribbled out words. That shows hesitation, and you can hear the rambling uneasiness in her story. Also, to me, the most interesting thing she scribbled out was an S at the end of canoe. That's right, she originally wrote that they got in canoes, plural, to come back to the campsites. I will circle back to that in a bit. Also, she specifically says Lauren and Chris went to sleep in the hammock. Aaron's written statement said, quote, Lauren I saw last night when we were coming back from the bar with our group. She had cried about her ex-boy, who I saw the next morning, and he said she had tried to make a move on him, and he refused. Said he saw her going to a houseboat. She was last seen by me, I would say, midnight before Hannah and I got in bed in our tent at the campsite. The next full sentence is scribbled out, and he signed it. Note how he vaguely implicates Lauren's ex-boyfriend. He also repeats the houseboat rumor. He admits he saw her at the campsite, but leaves out that she was in Chris's hammock. Christopher Stout's written statement to the police says, quote, last night, the girl came to our campsite for a few minutes, saying she was going back to her ex-boyfriend, hung out shortly, then fell asleep and woke up, and she was gone. Talked to her ex this morning, and he said she came back after we left and was trying to get with him the night after we seen her at campsite. Said she was trying to make out with him in front of his new girlfriend. Then he walked away. The end. That's it. His official written record the day Lauren's body is found. He accused her of leaving the campsite by herself in the middle of the night to go and try and get her ex-boyfriend back. Never mind that the ex, Clint Martin, firmly denies all of this, because Chris's story will change again anyway. Also, notice he does not mention that she was in the hammock with him. Hell, he doesn't even mention he was sleeping in a hammock. But now, both Chris and Aaron have tried to implicate Lauren's ex-boyfriend, Clint Martin. Again, Clint was there with his current girlfriend and denies all of this. An actual investigation might have proven where he was with witnesses. Hannah didn't try this particular lie officially. But then she wouldn't have had to worry about evidence from a rape kit, now would she? These written statements could not be more vague or unhelpful, and Jeremy Taylor should have known that. He should have been suspicious. But of course, even though he was the lead detective, an officer named Brian Williams took these statements. Jeremy Taylor did later interview Chris Stout. I say interview because it's not like any police interrogation or even questioning I've ever seen. He's on Chris's side from the start. He doesn't ask hard questions. He doesn't ask many questions at all. But when he does, they're leading questions, seemingly pointing Chris Stout back to his and Aaron Lilly's written statements, asking, do you think she went back after y'all went to the cliff? Meaning, did she go back to the marina bar after the group had gone back to the campsites? I guess it would be easier for Jeremy Taylor if they stuck to their original stories. It paints Lauren as a drunken, jealous party girl, intent on sleeping with her ex-boyfriend. That's a convenient narrative. A drunken girl trying to get down that cliff in the dark, holding on to the thin rope. Well, surely she just could have slipped. And you know what? That all could have happened. It's an easy scenario, but her injuries do not fit this narrative. Those steep hilltop cliffs around Center Hill Lake are packed with sharp brush, scratchy weeds, burrs, branches, sticks, and huge rocks. I really could go on and on. My point here is, where are the scrapes on her body? If she truly slipped and fell down that cliff, she would be covered in scratches, scrapes, probably open wounds, bad contusions, and yeah, her head split open like a watermelon, you know, like DeKalb County tried to claim to the family originally. Her autopsy was lacking in many ways, but the pictures don't lie. Lauren simply did not look like she had fallen off a sharp, rocky terrain. However, the medical examiner wrote that she had, quote, multiple abrasions and contusions, particularly of the legs and the right upper arm and left forearm. I saw no such abrasions on her legs. I did see a few scratches the medical examiner indicated on her arms, and to me, those definitely could be defensive wounds. She also had a broken nose, broken fingers, and ribs. Yeah, you could get those in a fall. that they certainly wouldn't be the only injuries. They are consistent with a fight, however. I've looked and looked and looked at the autopsy photos. It does not look like a fall down a brushy cliff with all sorts of obstacles. She looks like someone who got into a fight. You get broken noses, broken ribs from punches. You get broken fingers from trying to block punches or from punching back. We cannot discount Hannah Palmer's jealous reputation and tendency to pick physical fights. She started one Friday night with Cassie Franks. What is the difference if she thought Aaron was suddenly more into Lauren than her? Lauren's autopsy states that she died from blunt force trauma to the head. Yes, you could get that in a fall, but again, she would be much more banged up than she was. There was extensive hemorrhaging from her forehead to her posterior head, or the back of her skull, and the autopsy notes a lower thoracic vertebra fracture with compression and major hemorrhaging around the cord. An injury like that does often indicate a fall, often a fall from a great height. It would still lead me back to the fact that there are no other injuries consistent with a fall down that cliff. However, a forensic medical examiner was questioned about these sort of injuries and said that you could indeed get that blunt force trauma, head fracture, and the vertebra fracture from falling just a few feet if you went head first. Think about it. There was a 3-foot gap between the two campsites, with a ledge you had to go down first before you climbed back up to Lauren and Chris's campsite. It's entirely possible Lauren fell or was pushed right there. It's also possible she was running from an attacker and fell. There are many possibilities. What isn't possible, however, is that she fell into the water. Private investigator Sheila Wysocki and a certified hydrologist tested with a 100-pound dummy for hours. They tried over 50 times and could not get the dummy to land in the water. It's not possible even if you are jumping out purposely. It's definitely not possible from a fall. There are too many ways to get caught up on the cliff. This was also reenacted by Dennis Ferrier for the local Fox News station and also again on Crime Watch. Google those videos and watch for yourself. A body could not have fallen off that particular cliff and landed in the water, nor could it have drifted to the cove it was found in. According to the currents on that day, the body would have gone in the other direction, back towards the marina, not to the cove behind the cliff. It would have had to make a U-turn to go back there. It's just not possible. Now, we have to acknowledge the story that Lauren may have hit her head when she cliff-jumped earlier in the day. They claimed she passed out for a few seconds and then seemed fine. You can have a brain injury and still not show symptoms for up to 48 hours. But not along with a spinal fracture and the bleeding that was evident from fresh wounds on her scalp when her body was found. There are videos of her in great spirits, not at all looking in pain. There wasn't just one small skull fracture that might have happened earlier in the day. It was several skull fractures and one compression fracture to her spine. There's no way she was up walking around after that. You know how else you could get those injuries? From malicious, deadly force. Say, from someone beating her head against a rock, shoving her down with force. Especially if they shoved her from behind and she went headfirst into a hard surface. Her injuries are consistent with that type of assault. The autopsy photos also show a lot of hemorrhaging in her throat. The hemorrhaging in her throat is consistent with choking. The DeKalb County Sheriff's Department thinks you can't be raped if you're on your period. We all know how ignorant that is. You most certainly can be vaginally raped while on your period with a tampon in, and they didn't even mention the possibility of her being orally raped. The bruising on her thighs looks like she could have been held down there, maybe someone sitting on her to hold her down. The hemorrhaging in her throat could have been from someone holding her throat to force oral sex. And most importantly, maybe she did jump into the darkness, running from an attacker, and then fell down on the ledge between the campsites. Her attacker could have gone after her, retrieved her body, hoping she was still alive, only to find that she wasn't. What to do then? He, or they, couldn't leave her body in the water around their campsite. Maybe they stored her body in a canoe, waited for the end of the festival, and then paddled into the cove behind the campsite to dump her body. Remember that triangular mark on her stomach set in the lividity? Many people are certain it comes from the bow of a canoe. It makes more sense that she died sometime in the early morning hours after some sort of altercation. Then her body is thrown headfirst into a canoe, with her stomach resting on the bow and her feet hanging out. The canoe could have easily been hidden in the brush around the cove. And remember that slip Hannah made in her written statement to police, where she pluralized the word canoe to canoes and then scribbled it out? Maybe there were two canoes traveling back to the camp that night. If so, they could have hidden her body in one canoe while using the other one to go back to Wakefest. We don't know for sure who was even there, because we only have the word of three liars who continually changed their stories and acted very suspiciously from the get-go. And yeah, her fellow campers could have hidden her body and then returned to Wakefest, waited for the festivities to end, and then gone back to dump Lauren's body in a cove, hoping it would sink or at least wash up far away from their campsite long after they had left Center Hill and DeKalb County. By then, stories would be straight. They wouldn't even be in the vicinity. Hell, they might have had a completely different story planned by then. They would have had time to clean up the campsites and get rid of her things. They could have claimed that she wanted to stay and keep partying, but that they decided to leave. After all, Hannah rode in with Lauren, so Lauren had her own car there. That's a lie that might have worked. Instead, two fishermen found her body that same afternoon, and it's possible Aaron and Chris were paddling up to see what was going on because they had just left her there. Her body was not waterlogged as one that would have been there 8 to 12 hours. Even the mortician at the funeral home didn't believe it. The forensic pathologist consulted by the family, Dr. Amy Grzecki, noted that the lividity present at the original autopsy actually shortens the time of death, and certainly shortens the time that she would have been in the water. I told you, I didn't see bloating or any other indication of a body that had been in the water for some 12 hours. At most, just her fingertips had started to wrinkle. Think about it. If she died sometime during the night and they reported it, they would be immediate suspects. Instead, they dump her head first into the canoe, throw a tarp over her, and go join the end of the Wakefest party. Once it was over, they take her and dump her in the cove, hoping she would sink, drift, whatever, as long as it was far away from their campsites and she was not found until after they were gone. Then they go back to pack up camp and suddenly notice the rescue boats. She's been found. Too soon. So now they are in panic mode. They paddle out there acting as though they are looking for their missing friend. Only they hadn't reported her missing. And their behavior after she was found in front of Ryan Melanson and Chris Yarchuk was beyond suspicious. After Hannah and the two boys arrived home, Chris posted pictures they took at Wakefest to his social media with the caption, "Best weekend ever." He wound up editing the post to say, "Wakefest went pretty well this year, met some new friends that made it awesome. #Wakefest, #Wakefest2015. He finally took the post down after it went viral when Sherry discovered it. And why did Sherry discover it? Well, none of Lauren's friends showed up at Sherry's home to pay their respects. Sure, everyone grieves differently, and maybe they were in shock. But they also didn't show up at the funeral. At this point, how does that not look bad? Especially when Hannah Palmer is posting disingenuous things on Facebook about her best friend, Lauren Agee. Wouldn't you attend your best friend's funeral? Samantha Arnold did the same thing. She and Hannah were blocked from Lauren's Facebook page by Sherry Smith after making many posts about their supposed dear friend. They didn't give a shit about Lauren, and Sherry knew it. You know what happened then? Samantha Arnold sent Sherry Smith a series of messages cursing her out every way possible. Who acts like that? She was supposed to be Lauren's friend. Instead, she told Lauren's mother, quote, "I hope to God one day y'all feel miserable about the pain you caused other people." And she also told her to fuck off. Excuse me? This is a friend? And here's another quote for you. "You know, that much alcohol, that high of a cliff, that much water, accidents happen." Thus saith Aaron Lilly during a recorded conversation. I can just hear it in his douchebag bro speak. Can't you? He claims that Lauren was drunk and crying that Saturday night and wanted to go back down to see her ex-boyfriend Clint at the bar, but her friends talked her out of it. Aaron would later double down on this notion with a recorded conversation he had with another witness. He said she was so upset she wanted to leave the lake and they had to take her car keys away from her. So which was it? Did she want to go back to see her ex-boyfriend, or did she want to leave? Detective Jeremy Taylor told Chris Stout, quote, I told Aaron and Hannah, the media is going to take it and turn it into a murder first thing. Before any questions are asked, they're going to turn this into a murder. Well, Jeremy Taylor, what if it was a murder? You did not investigate it properly. You would rather preemptively blame the media than conduct a proper death investigation. DeKalb County closed the case and refused to reopen it. The DA said without any investigation at the time, there was little he could do after the fact. So now we wait. We wait for the wrongful death suit to finally end. So, where are they all now? Well, Aaron and Hannah married less than a year after Lauren's death. They had a baby girl this past January. It might be romantic that they married that quickly, but it might also be convenient. After all, as husband and wife, they cannot be compelled to testify against each other. Christopher Stout is in jail, serving time for violation of probation after his third DUI in which he fled the scene. I'm not sure when he is due to be released, but he is still facing the civil suit. Bricks Gambrel is still hashtagging his way through life, documenting every moment of adventures he enjoys while Lauren Agee is still as dead as she was on July 26, 2015. Like I said, he's lawyered up and is still fighting depositions. There is no proof he was there Saturday night or what he might have done on Sunday. But wouldn't you like to hear his side of the story? Aaron Lilly is too vain to even make his Instagram account private. He did have the sense to delete any pictures at Wakefest that year, but there are pictures all around it. I'd like to point you to a picture I'll have on my social media. It's of Christopher Stout taking a long-angle group shot of people partying on a boat. Zoom in, and you'll see Aaron Lilly mooning the camera while Hannah Palmer is laughing with a beer. This picture was taken less than 2 weeks after Lauren's death. What is wrong with these people? Their behavior the day Lauren was found and the days after, including not paying their respects to Lauren's family, was bad enough, suspicious enough. But these idiots don't even have the respect to stop openly documenting their partying on the lake just 2 weeks after Lauren's death. Probably because they think they got away with it. Maybe they still think they have. Let's not let them. You know their names. Just look at my social media if you want to see their faces. I will also direct you to look at pictures of Lauren's lifeless body, thrown away in a cove, while they kept partying at Wakefest. The justice system has let us down. Let the court of public opinion try these fools. At least until the civil proceedings are finished. And to the DeKalb County Police, I want to be on your side. I want to believe you and trust you. Why didn't you perform a rape kit? Why did you lie to her parents about the state of Lauren's body at the hospital? Why did you insist on refusing to investigate? I don't see the point in an actual cover-up. Who gives a shit about puny-ass Aaron Lilly or Chris Stout? I think you had to lie to cover your incompetence. Most families might have accepted that. A lot of people would take your word. I'm sorry. Your daughter died tragically. You don't want to look. It was an awful accident, and I'm so sorry. It takes a lot of courage for a family to insist to see their daughter that way. After being told her head was split open like a watermelon, they still looked. It also takes a lot of resilience to stay after this case the way Lauren's family has. To look into that void. To face the worst. They did. And they deserve answers. This was not easy to research, and definitely not easy to see. I've seen autopsy photos before, and they're never okay. But I got angry when I looked at Lauren's photos. That's no fall, and her head is definitely not split like a watermelon. That girl was beaten. Hey, medical examiner, what's wrong with you? Are you just ready to rubber stamp whatever the police told you happened? Does that make your job easier? And back to the police. Isn't the bad press worse for you? Who are you so afraid of? I still wonder if there were two canoes that night. I still wonder who might have been in the second canoe. I still wonder who really spent the night at those campsites. I hope this case blows wide open. I hope the damn truth comes to light. Lauren deserves it. Her parents deserve it. The people of DeKalb County, of Hendersonville, Center Hill Lake, of Tennessee, we all deserve the truth. We send our kids out there. We trust that law enforcement cares about their safety, that you would do anything to protect them. What did you do? Nothing, that's what. And now we're left with the real questions. What did Lauren endure? Who did she fight? How many were there? It could have been one guy. He could have raped her, gotten too rough, then enlisted his buddies into helping him clean up his mess. He also could have carried a girl weighing less than 120 pounds down the cliff all on his own. Or it could be something altogether more sinister. Was Hannah involved? Was Samantha? Samantha's behavior after Lauren's death was more than atrocious. Why does she insist on inserting herself into this case? Her friends certainly didn't implicate her. This case was so ridiculously mishandled from start to finish, and now we'll never know what really happened on the cliff that night. But someone knows. Somebody, anybody there that night could come forward and end this suffering. That I know. That Lauren's parents know. It's too damned bad that DeKalb County Police, Jeremy Taylor, and Sheriff Patrick Ray refused to investigate this further. I would like to remind our listeners that Sheriff Ray serves at the will of the people. That is an elected position. And he has done everything possible to stymie this investigation. He was subpoenaed for the civil suit and has fought and delayed his deposition so long that it hasn't happened yet. Private investigator Sheila Wysocki is still knee-deep in this case, collecting evidence, conducting interviews. But she's created a long-form series on Lauren's case with actual interviews with witnesses, police reports, and much more detail than I could provide. I can tell you, she cares about this case. She cares about Lauren's family. She knows that at this point, justice is futile. She wants you to know. She wants you to make a difference. Maybe you can do that at the ballot box. Sheila's podcast on Lauren Agee's case, Without Warning, premieres July 26th, next week, on the third anniversary of Lauren's death. You will get a deep dive into the case and the players involved and come to your own opinions on this scandalous, heartbreaking story. Make sure and follow Without Warning on social media, and of course, I'll keep you updated. I'll meet you on the other side. We'll have a lot to talk about. Southern Fraud True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fraud's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Special thanks to Sheila Wysocki for her generosity with her time, as well as her tenacious intent to get some measure of justice for Lauren. Please stay tuned to hear a preview of her long-form podcast on Lauren's case that premieres next week, Without Warning. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. You can also listen directly from Spreaker, my network online, or their app. And I'm also on Stitcher, Overcast, and many other podcatchers. If you're interested in supporting the show, I have a Patreon page with many different rewards for different levels of donation. Or you can visit my website, southernfriedtruecrime.com, where you can make a one-time donation just by hitting the donate button. If you have any comments, corrections, or suggestions, you can email me at southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I love hearing from you guys, and I'm always searching for new cases. So please feel free to reach out. I'm also all over social media. Just search the show name in your favorite platform if you'd like to connect with me there. If you're interested in discussing the Lauren Agee case or any other episodes further, come check out my discussion group. It's linked to my Southern Fried True Crime Facebook page. I would love to hear your thoughts. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Y'all take care.
My friend, I can't find her.
From the time I went to sleep to the time I went awake, there's nothing. It's just a void.
My baby girl's life was taken by unscrupulous individuals who may have done this before but will probably do it again.
Tragedy and mystery surround the death of a young woman remembered for her laugh.
Because obviously they knew something and they hadn't reported anything.
We're going into a death trap.
Lauren Agee found dead Sunday in Center Hill Lake.
The only time you're going to report it is when law enforcement is en route to the body?
There is something about being at someone's last place of life and knowing they were alive 1 second and dead the next.
And he said, I need to tell you that your daughter didn't make it. She's dead.
Tune in on July 26th at 4:30 p.m. to Without Warning Podcast, hosted by Sheila Waisaki.
My friend, I can't find her.
From the time I went to sleep to the time I went away, there's nothing. It's just a void.
My baby girl's life was taken by unscrupulous individuals who may have done this before but will probably do it again.
Tragedy and mystery surround the death of a young woman remembered for her laugh.
Because obviously they knew something and they hadn't reported anything.
We're going into a death trap.
Lauren Agee found dead Sunday in Center Hill Lake.
The only time you're going to report it is when law enforcement is en route to the body.
There is something about being at someone's last place of life and knowing they were alive 1 second and dead the next.
And he said, I need to tell you that your daughter didn't make it. She's dead.
Tune in on July 26th at 4:30 p.m. to Without Warning Podcast, hosted by Sheila Waisaki.